I'll call the meeting to order. Dr. Dennison, did you see who all is here today?
Dr. Philip Bale.
Present.
Ms. Kiana Boca.
Here.
Ms. Cynthia Harris.
Here.
Mr. Freddie Higdon.
Here.
Mr. Gil Johnson.
Here.
Mr. James Kennedy.
Here.
Dr. Patricia Mentor.
Present.
Mr. David Porter.
Here.
Mr. John Ridley.
Here.
Mr. Larry Zelke.
Present.
We have 100% attendance today.
Yeah. That's good. Congratulations to everyone individually and to the group as a whole. And, you know, this is unusual but very good situation to have. A special meeting, so it's a special occurrence, I guess. President Ransdell has some introductions to make and comments.
I do. I would like to make two introductions and one reiteration of someone you already know. But first, I would like to introduce Gordon Johnson. Gordon is, stand up, Gordon. As you may know, or I communicated with you a few weeks ago, Gordon has been named our chief IT officer. And let me just tell you briefly a little bit about Gordon at the risk of maybe embarrassing him because he's a pretty modest guy, but his credentials are not so modest. After graduating from Harvard University in 1978, he worked early in his career for a number of IT software and services firms in the Northeast, including Electronic Data Systems, under Ross Perot and Boston Investment Systems. He has worked in WKU's Division of Information Technology for the last 25 years, and during that time, he held a number of different technical and managerial positions. For the last 15 years, he's been the director of IT's largest department, Administrative Systems and Applications, and has had responsibility for the leadership management and support of WKU's mission-critical enterprise systems and its two data centers. Gordon has had leadership involvement in the deployment of most of the major applications and IT services available to the WKU community today. And this was a very easy transition with Bob Owens' move to Santa Clara University in just a few weeks. And Gordon, we're delighted that you are assuming responsibility for our IT division. I look forward to working directly with you, and he will be a member of my administrative council. So we're delighted with Gordon in this new role. Welcome. Go for it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And then secondly, I want to introduce to you, and I don't want to usurp Brian Meredith's latitude here as he makes his report shortly, but, Brian, why don't you and Jay Sluck stand up? Dr. Lux has his Doctor of Education in Education Leadership, and he is appointed our new Director of Recruitment and Admissions, and that decision has been made in recent weeks and was just announced this week. You may know Jace from his highly successful work as our Director of Forensics since 2010. Jace has all three of his degrees from WKU, Bachelor's, Master's of Arts, and his Doctor of Education and Education Leadership, and we're delighted. He has been heavily engaged in recruitment and admissions in a very defined way, and now we're broadening that horizon in a very general way to recruit and build our incoming classes going forward, working with a superb admissions team. And I am pleased with Jace's new appointment. Sharon Hunter and Dale Brown, I'm not sure Dale's here, but Sharon is here, will continue to, who have been serving as interim for the last few months, will continue to work closely with Jace and Brian in our recruitment and admissions program. So Jace has a very bright future in higher education, and we're delighted with this opportunity for him to lead our recruitment and admissions program. Welcome, Jace. And you already know Brian Russell. Brian is right back here. You've heard from Brian many times in our facilities reports, but with John Osborne's retirement, Brian is assuming responsibilities as our chief facilities officer and will also be serving on the administrative council and reporting directly to me. and has long provided great leadership in our facilities operations. Now he's in planning, design, and construction, and now resumes responsibilities for all of our facilities operations. So, Brian, reaffirmation of your appointment, and look forward to working directly with you. And these are great examples, all three of these appointments, of our ability to grow, train, and appreciate the talent within WKU. And it's always been my philosophy to have a good mix of talent that came up through our programs here, blended with talent that we bring from other universities. And I think we have a good blend of that. But in these three circumstances, we had superb people waiting in the wings, ready to assume more and greater responsibility. So, Brian, Jace, and Gordon, congratulations to all of you. Look forward to working with you. Thank you.
The next order of business is the Finance and Budget Committee. Call on Chairman Ridley.
We have one item this morning, 1.1, the request to approve the 2014-15 budget, including tuition and fee schedule. So I would need a motion to bring this to the floor.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion is on the table. Ann?
I'm sure that the 100% attendance this morning is due to the excitement that you feel about approving this budget. So I'll roll right along and hopefully not disappoint you. So, as Mr. Ridley said, we want you to approve the 14-15 budget, including the tuition and the fees schedule. That's your motion, and let me give you a little bit of overview. The first two slides, which are also in the executive summary of your operating budget, summarize the what we want you to approve is the tuition and fee schedule for next year. The tuition and fee schedule complies with the maximum parameters set by the CPE that the resident undergraduate rate would not be greater than 5%. Ours will be at 4.8%. Most of these rates go up by 5% with rounding a little bit. Some are 4.9, some are 5.1. But just essentially most of them are around the 5%. The exception would be, a couple of exceptions. One, Kim, go ahead and go back. One would be the non-resident domestic graduate rate. One of the goals in graduate studies is to close the gap between the domestic and the international rates without reducing our ability to recruit non-residents into our graduate programs. The second exception on the next slide would be we used to call it online learning, now we call it on demand. I think that's a marketing a tactic to improve the perception about the program that's offered basically through the Division of Extended Learning. But the undergraduate tuition rate is going up actually 4% instead of 4.8%. What we would like to do as a goal at one time, if you look at the rates for undergraduate and graduate, the goal is to have them 20% higher than the resident rate that students pay for on-campus classes. We managed to, for budget reasons, take the undergraduate rate slightly higher, we're at 21.5%. So we're trying to get back to a straight 20% rate higher than the resident rate. On an annual basis, we'd like you to be able to put our tuition and fees rates in context of our projected cost of attendance at WKU. Some really good news on this is that if you look at the Student Life Foundation Housing and Residence Life recommended rates, they're keeping housing down to slightly above 3%. That's an average of, obviously, different residence halls have different rates. The meal plans with Aramark managing our restaurants, we feel really happy to present to you that a 19 meal plan, the estimated cost is only a 1% increase. So overall, The cost of attendance usually stays with books at $1,000. You might have situations that it's higher, but anecdotal from one parent, I found that I never had $1,000 in book expenses, which I was happy about for my son. So we continue with an estimate of books at $1,000, giving us an overall cost increase of only 3.4% projected for next year. Getting into the budget. We're asking you to approve a budget that's slightly higher than $392 million. What you'll see is that it is a decline from the FY14 budget of about 0.5%. To understand the decline in the budget, you have to look at the revenue sources by whether they're unrestricted or restricted. The unrestricted is primarily, we'll get into the next slide in a minute, but your tuition and fees and your state appropriation, your restricted, obviously, are federal, state grants, contracts, Pell grants, financial aid. So the changes in the unrestricted E&G, the $307 million, there are a few factors that affect that number and its growth of only 1.3%. Because you could say, well, wait a minute, you're asking me to approve a 4.8% increase in tuition. Why is that number only about 1.3% and tuition is so important? First of all, let me tell you that one revenue stream that we do budget is called carry forward. You hear about unrestricted net assets that are funds not spent in the previous year that are brought forward primarily for one-time expenses. So due to budget reductions and careful management, what we've got is a 25%. This budget reflects a 25% reduction in the one-time money budget. So that has an impact on the total percentage. Additionally, as we'll get into later, is that we're not budgeting for the operation of a health services clinic. That center had approximately $1.3 million. In clinical revenue. On the positive side, athletics budget is going up by $1.6 million, which represents the Athletics Conference USA distribution. So that's being budgeted by athletics. On the restricted budget, there are two variables that contribute to the decline. One is approximately 10% decline in budget-to-budget on grants and contracts. It has been extremely difficult to be competitive at the federal level. So that is, in fact, driving a reduction in the restricted funds. The other larger component of a drop in restricted funds has to do with a decline in Pell grants. The Pell grants, we think, will go down approximately 9%. And that is more of a reflection of a decrease in the number of eligible recipients. So if you have any additional questions on that one, we might revisit that on another occasion. But I Brian, I'm not sure you could get if this is a good statement or not, but I think there is some shift in our enrollment as to the percentage of our enrollment that's actually Pell eligible. So that might be a different discussion, but that reflects the fact that we think we'll have less Pell-eligible students. The decline in the auxiliary enterprises in some ways is an accounting adjustment. When we brought forward the fiscal year 14 budget, we anticipated a partnership that would allow an Apple campus store to run the purchases through the WKU store. After getting into the operation of sales, it was not the right budget tool. The Apple computers are actually bought by departments through the Department of Purchasing. So it's a recognition that we weren't going to be operating in a manner that ran these purchases through the WKU store. There's also a decline in used books, and we'll be addressing a little bit in the future of what we plan to do to turn around the bookstore and to be more competitive. We're starting a new biennium. The General Assembly enacted a two-year budget, 14-16, and as you've heard in our legislative updates, there are changes in the state appropriation. The increase in KERS, we are obviously appreciative, as it could have been zero as it had been in several years. The $1,330,000 actually funds about 60% of the cost increase for KERS, the rate increase. We have about 655 E&G budgeted positions that we have to contribute to the KERS system. The 1.5% budget reduction. And then just to put a two-year perspective out there, we look forward to the state appropriation increase in the second year of a biennium to be able to expand the Gatton Academy. Based on this enacted budget and projected changes in the Higher Education Price Index, which we use as an inflationary measure, we are giving you a snapshot of where we believe we may be by the end of the biennium, assuming that we have the same enrollment in fall 13 with no growth, which we think is understated, and again applying approximately a 2.8% cost increase based on the Higher Education Price Index. So what this tells you is that since fiscal year 2008, in terms of real purchasing power, the state funding per FTE student has declined $1,386. So when the state asks about what are you doing to become more efficient, I'm usually pretty quick to say, well, with about 1,400 less per student and record numbers of degrees conferred every year, I believe we pretty well have shown you that we are efficient. So obviously we hope in the next biennium the state economy will be better and we can regain some of this lost purchase power.
And leave it there just for a second.
Go back, please.
That's a telling slide, but it only shows really what has taken place in this recessionary environment. I think it's important for the board to keep in mind that our biggest drop in funding per FTE occurred between 1998 and 2008. While our enrollment was growing at a dramatic rate, state appropriations were not. And at one time, and I don't have the exact figure, but somewhere close to $7,500 per student in 1997-98. I think that's fairly close. If you really want to look at our state funding challenge, if you go back to the enactment of House Bill 1, Higher Ed Reform, we watched our state appropriation drop dramatically from over $7,000 a student to now something $4,600 per student. And that's been the biggest challenge we've had to face over the last 17 years is watching our funding per student decline. While we've grown and had to raise tuition to offset much of that decline.
So projected revenue by source, it reiterates that the importance of tuition and fees, given that we're getting closer and closer for it being half of our budget, and the state appropriation, even including the Gatton Academy, only 18.5% of our funding. If you look a decade ago, the tuition and fees was about 34%, and the state appropriation was about 28%. So as President Ransdell said, if we took the same chart and showed you back to 17 years ago, the shift of what is actually supporting higher education has been significant, the shift in terms of the students' portion of the total expenses.
And could you distinguish between auxiliary enterprises and self-generated,
sure,
please?
Because that terminology, auxiliary enterprises are self-generated, aren't they?
Yes.
So the auxiliary enterprises are those operations that we distinctly recognize them as having to cover all of their costs, even including their utilities. So it includes, the largest one is the WKU store. And the operation of the Downing Student Union all fall under auxiliary enterprises. The rest of them are the centers, Garrett Conference Center, But they're full-cost centers. In comparison to self-generated, which is revenue that is generated by a department that is returned to supplement their operating budget, you've heard us call them revenue-dependent. I always somehow the first thing that comes to mind to me is Center for Gifted Studies, a very successful program that we call revenue-dependent, but we don't ask them to pay the lights. You know, we contribute custodial and utility costs, but they pay all of their direct costs. So athletics has obviously significant self-generated revenue that is included in that category.
Thank you.
Reiterating the point about the distribution of state appropriations versus tuition and fees. So again, why we place such emphasis on student recruitment and retention is the significance of what tuition and fees means out of every dollar for what we are capable of achieving. The unrestricted E&G budget, again, educational and general budget, which means that it doesn't include the auxiliary enterprises. So that's where we focus on where we have our most discretion on how we allocate our resources. We don't include the restricted because the money we receive for Pell Grants and grants and contracts cannot be used for any other purpose. We have approximately 57% of our budget, or $175 million, invested in personnel. Personnel is everything from the wages of full-time employees, part-time employees, graduate assistants, all the benefits for retirement, life, health that are associated with employment. It includes student employment. But 57% of the budget invested in personnel obviously poses challenges when every time that we face a budget reduction. So we have this budget does include a budget reduction. But we continue to do the best we can to protect our employment base to guarantee the efficient delivery of services. This personnel budget includes approximately 2,200 full-time budgeted positions. The going to towards the left, student financial aid includes our investment in institutional scholarships. I'll have a little more to say about that in a moment. It includes the mandated waivers we've discussed with the state, requires us to allow students to attend at no cost, and it includes graduate fellowships and the grants and aid related to athletics. The debt service number does not include approximately $2.7 million of debt associated with Downing Student Union that will be paid for out of the Auxiliary Enterprises budget. That's the same budget that we're talking about that you approved a fee, $70 per...
70?
I believe it's $70 per semester per full-time student to support the debt on the Downing Student Union, and that will generate approximately $2.1 million. So the debt service just on the unrestricted E&G side of it is just slightly more than $14
million. May I ask a question?
Yes.
So that's the unrestricted E&G debt service is 4.6% of the total budget. But when you put all of the debt service together with the agency bonds, the DSU project, et cetera, is that the $16.8 million number?
Yes.
Okay, and what total percentage of the budget is that?
I didn't come up with a percent. It's $2.7 million more for the
Downing. Do you want to do that
Downing.
One more? Okay. We'll calculate that and have it to you while we're...
When is it? 5.5.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
It should be.
Thank you. Any more questions on the distribution of our budget?
No.
Okay. Just to give you a little different graphic for a change on how do we allocate our money.
Could you go back one?
Yes.
I bring this up every time. The student aid 62.3 is. Do you have any percentage number of what the unfunded mandated governmental restrictions are on the student aid?
Okay, that is not governmental restrictions. That's just our
unfunded mandates, though.
Okay, that would be the what we call mandated by the
mandated scholarships.
Yeah.
We're always talking about cutting cost, and yet
the
legislation is requiring us to do some of these, and we don't get any funding, again, impacting the same point that Dr. Ransell has already made. But we as a board and the community need to be conscious of this as our legislators go up and make these sweeping changes and give that...
It's about 4.1
really,
million.
4.1 million, and then take that as a percentage of 36. That's a 10% of that number.
Yeah. 4.1 million is required by the Commonwealth. The largest piece of that has to do with other university and community college employees choosing to take WKU courses. Yeah.
So, but that is part of the 36.2?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's not that the 4.1 is mandated, it's just that the policies that the state enacts force us to offer free courses or discounted courses to various populations, not necessarily of our choosing. Not all of which are negative, but it's very difficult when we get a mandate that we've got to cover without any state funding to support it.
And the way that you could also look at this in another way is those when we raise tuition on all students, some of that is impacted because we're being told that we have to provide free services for other students. So we need to kind of think through that.
That's a good point that I should have included in any discussion of our scholarship budget.
Exactly.
We when we have a 4.8% increase in tuition, obviously that's going to cause that number to be a greater percentage of our budget because we have a choice, and we make that conscious choice that we are not going to reduce our number of scholarships just because we have a rate increase. So continuing students don't see any decline in the value of their award.
Thank you.
Distribution of our budget and recognition of organizational area by division, and on the unrestricted resources, so kind of starting at the bottom, academic affairs accounts for about 51 cents of every dollar. Then you can understand as it relates to facilities, the next largest would be 10 cents on every dollar.
And other would include?
University-wide. Which includes some staff benefits undistributed, some contingencies, a small amount of budgeted contingencies, and it includes faculty, staff, scholarships, dependent child waivers. Those are probably the largest ones. Here's our debt box.
That's a good slide.
Do we put the debt?
Debt's in
there. Debt is in the other.
Debt is another. Okay. That's a good slide. Could you get that to us after the fact?
Sure.
I have copies.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Sure. Going into the nuts and bolts of building the budget, fiscal realities, fiscal challenges. How did we handle a state appropriation reduction of 1.1? A tuition shortfall, which also included some deficits in some scholarship accounts, especially related to the mandated waivers. A small amount necessary to balance the budget. We were looking at a fiscal challenge of about 5.3 million. The administration's decision was to proceed with reducing divisions budgets, but also trying to minimize the impact of divisions budgets by making two choices regarding health services clinic privatization and a reorganization based on retirement that contributed $1.3 million to bring the divisions reduction down to $4 million. Your agenda item and your executive summary both detail how the divisions have chosen to reduce their budget by $4 million.
Is the 1.3 net of the debt service?
That wouldn't be included.
Yes. That is not in that. That is just direct operating costs.
And
so we got to back out the debt service. That was about $300,000.
No, that's part of the university budget that all the revenue sources cover. It wouldn't be part of.
At this point, that is still a university expense. We'll get into that one.
So the net savings, though, is not 1.3.
The net savings was $1,090,000.
Yes, the total expenses would exceed 1.3, of which we're recovering approximately 1.1 million out of the direct costs of health services.
The difference is continuing to fund our wellness programs, our employee and student wellness programs.
And we're going to talk about that because that's in the footprint of the building and all that. Yeah. You'll notice.
Yes.
Correct. Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Fixed costs and recurring commitments. You're aware that we proceeded with a 1% cost of living adjustment with a floor of 500. After you factor in the floor, that equated to actually a 1.2% average increase based on the number of employees that were making less than 50,000. The academics is a category that we simplify, that we want you to know that this is an increase to maintain our library books, subscriptions, online journals. The minority faculty hiring plan and faculty promotions all roll into academics, and it was approximately $600,000 in that category. We talked about the retirement system rate increase at about $2.5 million. Student financial assistance was actually in your $11 million is $4.2 million, which again includes the tuition rate increase. We have a higher acceptance rate, which is good news. And I think it's already been presented to the board, a slight restructuring in our scholarship package to try to make us more competitive. So what we have is a projection that actually we'll have enrollment growth next fall in some of our scholarship categories. The health insurance identified here is permanent money for an increase that occurred January 2014. So it's not a new increase, it's just permanent funding. In the current year, divisions have in fact reduced their budgets by about $502,000 to fund this for the January to June portion of the calendar year.
And does the Affordable Care Act have you got that in consideration for that January 2014?
Actually,
if it in fact increases.
Actually, we have it we're in plan design for 2015. We did manage with this rate increase that went into effect January of 14. We believe we've got a solid program, but we'll be bringing forward and explain that to the board that we think that we will have a very consumer health education awareness accountability. We're going to implement some new variables into our health insurance program and then restructure our health insurance program for January 2015. That puts us in the best position for the Affordable Care Act and maintaining a cost-effective program.
So we've got a time frame between now and...
We do. So we identified some variables that actually kicked in 2014 mm-hmm. and funded them within the plan. Tony, is that appropriate?
So all the revenue sources, both from the university and the employees, will fund the plan, fund the fees, and fund all the associated costs.
Thank you.
We have contractual obligations. Many of these fall in information technology, systems like Blackboard that are important to the educational component. Permanent funding to improve the radio system and CAD system for the police department. We have identified military services as a significant program that was being funded with one-time money, and to shore it up by putting about $112,000 in to move it from one-time money to a permanent budget. The quality enhancement program has to do with accreditation. And it is a minimal amount of money to implement a new plan in association with our reaffirmation. International Student Support Services relates to is this the tuition surcharge? International
yes.
Student Support Services.
Yes.
There's actually a surcharge on international undergraduate students, and this reflects the growth in international students. The amount of money on the surcharge that tuition that goes back to create support services for those populations. And then we have a small amount, about $140,000, that we just put down in an other category. So obviously we wished we could have done more for salaries. We wish we could do more to implement our action plan. But as you see in your budget narrative, the divisions have identified what they would like to accomplish over the next year. And it's an important document for you to see what our priorities are. Not all of our priorities have to be funded with new revenue. And we're constantly in a cycle of saying, what can we do? What can we reallocate? How we can be efficient? But we will continue, even with limited resources, to be consistent with the action plan and achieving the goals of the university. The next category I call program allocations, specific money generated that we return for growth in those areas. The nursing growth, for example, is committed to growth that's going to occur in the BSN and the DNP, and the operating costs associated with being in the new facility. There's a lease obligation on the new facility with the medical center. Continued growth in the physical therapy program that will allow those funds to be returned. The Division for Extended Learning and Outreach, approximately $1.3 million. Our entrepreneurial unit is continued to be successful, and the funds that they generate, we return to that division. Summer school actually went down a couple hundred thousand. Our decline in enrollment has not been just fall and spring. But given the total summer school budget, that's not a significant decline, and I'm sure they're looking for ways to turn that around. Again, some additional funds related to, that's the international surcharge. The other one had to do with agent operating costs associated. Again, there's two pieces to this. When you grow your international population, they come in with some unique needs. So out of our enrollment management area, we know that we have to shore that up for people to be successful, to make sure that they have the support services necessary, because our students are a lot of times our best recruiters. So to the degree that you have happy international students that can be successful here, that helps us recruit other students. The last category, I'm not sure we've used the word before with you, cohorts. Distinct populations of students that are almost pilot programs. We do pilot programs through the Division of Extended Learning. Then when they are successful, we roll them in as if they're any other degree program. Our successes have ended up in an RN to a BSN program, sports, media, and branding, and dietetics. Three programs created in partnership with the faculty in DLO, successful programs, and now they're ready to say, okay, we're ready to... you might call it mainstream. I'll put those programs back into the regular budget.
I had a quick question.
Yes.
If you go back to the last slide about physical therapy doctoral program, because when the board approved this program, we were told that the startup costs would be covered by donations, which I gather it went beyond that. But at what point does this become a self-supporting program?
I think it is self-supporting.
I'll defer to Dr. Emsley on that one.
When you generate revenue, you have to show expense.
Right.
But John Bonagiro is not here. Gordon?
It's already self-supporting in the sense that we had a number of one-time funds in advance that we have. The college, for example, loaned some dollars that will be repaid through fiscal year 19.
Okay, so the repayment will be until 19.
Assess a greater percentage of the tuition. Next year will be 5%. That's one of the additional revenue sources you'll see in the budget. That number will grow to 30%.
Okay.
At which point we've achieved a fairly standard 70-30 split, at which point we take this very large incubator program, if you like, and put it into the main budget. So a steady progression for the next five fiscal years.
Okay, thank you.
But the statute does require that these programs be self-supported.
I mean, they are completely self. We have a separate index for these programs, which the tuition revenue from the students covers the cost of the faculty in the program, the portion of the lease appropriate to that program, and so forth.
Thank you.
We're budgeting on 90 DPT students for next year.
Three cohorts, it'll grow 30, 60, 90.
And 90 is the maximum?
Yes.
That's maturation point then. Okay.
Well, it's 60 this year starting July 1, and then
by
July 1 of 15, it will be 90.
By next May.
Thank you.
The last section of the budget that we present to you summarizes capital. As you're aware, the General Assembly did approve renovation of the Science Campus Phase 4, and we will address that one, that project specifically, in another agenda item with the Finance and Budget Committee. But that's $48 million, which is a very significant investment, I trust, to complete the Science Campus, and we do too. So the second piece in a capital budget is the General Assembly gives you authorization to proceed with projects if you have the funds. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you actually have money in the bank to do all these projects, but you at least get legislative authorization. So in your total capital budget of almost $186 million, you'll see a line that says restricted funds. That terminology is the state's terminology, not to be confused with Pell grants and contracts. From a state's perspective, it's either state appropriation, it's federal private funds, or it's restricted funds. So all of our self-generated revenue. In that number, it's detailed in the capital budget, but you'll see items that are pool budgets for major maintenance projects should we need to exercise that authority. And you'll see in that budget, that includes capital projects that have been underway that are not quite complete yet. It does include, as you see under agency bonds, DSU. We're still making a transition to DSU. International Center and Honors College. We didn't make it. We thought we caught all the DUCs, but we missed one. So the authorization is allowed by the General Assembly would give us about $186 million. We did take the legislative authorization and in the back of the capital budget pull out some significant projects that we really don't believe will start, but it, should something happen, we could move them to Brian Russell's list. But we try not to overstate the capital budget, but in some of those items when they're pool budgets, we just go ahead and include them for your approval.
And the restricted funds also are, does that include the $10 million gift for expansion of the Gatton Academy?
No.
So that would add to that once that project is teed up?
We haven't recognized that as an official gift yet. Interesting point.
Thank you.
Keep in mind that for the biennium beginning July 1, we did not seek agency bond authorization for any projects. I guess we were the only university that did not.
Correct.
But we chose not to pursue any agency bond projects for the next 2 years. So I just want to remind the board that we received no agency bond authority for the 15-16 biennium. Fiscal years 15 and 16.
And if you did look at a list of university projects across the Commonwealth in the agency bond category, what you'll see is several institutions committing significant agency bonds for expanding their residence halls, improving their residence halls, and their dining facilities. So that's one of those items that we're watching to see how that translates to our competitive position as they have to raise their housing and dining rates in order to pay for those bonds. So our Student Life Foundation model has just been tremendous. We have made those improvements. Now other institutions are realizing that they're at a competitive disadvantage and are issuing agency bonds to address those needs. Lastly, we try to finish on something a positive note. Who did we pick this year? My wonderful staff picked Benjamin Franklin. An investment in knowledge pays the best interest. Let me take this moment to thank Kim Reed, our budget director, Stacy Garrett, who's hiding in the back, but she's not hiding. She's busy all the time, and the two of them did a phenomenal job with this budget. It is a challenge to do a budget when the legislative session is underway and you're not actually sure what your state appropriation is going to be till April. To implement a budget reduction and build a budget with a tuition rate increase and still meet your budget approval timeline is a tremendous accomplishment. I'll also thank, I never do this, but I thought I would this time, if we go back to the first slide. Can we go back? Yeah. Sometimes I get tired of coming before you with a budget that I don't think is terribly exciting, but I would like to thank our university photographers for once, because they truly give us wonderful budget covers. So I don't know if that's a Clint Lewis shot, but I'm always pleased that something about this shot makes me feel that it's very tranquil and optimistic going into fiscal year 15. And lastly, thank Administrative Council and Dr. Ransdell, because we wouldn't be presenting this budget unless we had a cohesive decision-making body that allowed us to make some of these tough decisions for budget reductions and careful budget allocations to bring forward a balanced budget to you. That's the end of my remarks.
Thank you, Ann. Through Ann's presentation, thanks everyone for their interest and their questions. Gil and Patty, do I have a motion, or are there more discussion? More discussion?
Didn't we? Right?
No, we didn't approve. Brought it to the floor.
Move to approve.
Can I have a question?
Recognize. Yes.
Every time I go through this, I think surely there's something that I've heard this before. What's an incentive student on the undergraduate
tuition incentive program?
What's that?
They are selected counties where we allow a discount. It's called TIP.
Neighboring
counties. Many of them are Tennessee, Indiana, and some counties that help us increase our diversity in selected. But it's all county-based, where we allow approximately in-state plus 33% more. So it's a recruitment tool. So it's easier to market a lower tuition rate than it is to give them the full non-resident rate and then allocate a scholarship.
We have three categories of TIP students: those who live in the counties that Ann describes, those who come with high academic credentials and are recruited for academic purposes, 3.5 and a 24 ACT. If you're out of state, you get the TIP rate. Am I correct in that? And then the third category are legacy students. Sons and daughters of alumni can come on the TIP rate, which is in-state plus about 30%, which equates to about half of the out-of-state rate. So just those are the three categories of tuition incentive program students.
Okay.
I have a question and a comment. Yes. Is it okay, parliamentary, if I go ahead? Thanks. This actually, for Dr. Meredith and his team, and you can answer this in the academic affairs report, because I know you're going to do a full report later this week. But I just, to Dr. Dennison's question, I just noticed yesterday when I was in Tennessee that this type of TIP program is being advertised by other institutions all over the place. I saw the billboards coming up I-65, so I'll just pass that off to you, and if you can just educate us a little bit more about which of our competitor institutions do similar programs, and you know, just kind of help us put that in context. I think that would be great. I just had a comment. I don't think anyone on the board is under the illusion that this is a budget situation that's anything other than difficult, and I think we're also aware that it could be far worse, and for that I am grateful. It's certainly not as bad as it looked maybe on February 1 when we first started these conversations. But again, I've got to note that, as always, the cuts have fallen disproportionately on the academic mission. And I know that there are those who would say that academic affairs is the largest part of the budget, and therefore the cut would logically be proportionally bigger. But my reply is this, and I think that where does every cent of the dollar go, I think that really shows this. Academic affairs is getting 51 cents on the dollar. And then, you know, faculty concerned about research, research gets 2 cents of that dollar. So that's 53 cents out of every dollar. And my reply is this, that we can't forget this is a university that we're governing. And it's a place where teaching, research, and service are what we do. And the life of the mind is the paramount consideration. And I've spoken with the board before about my concerns that I and the faculty constituency I represent have about the university's priorities, how monies are spent to promote things that we would consider to be entertainment, how monies are spent on brick and mortar over educational priorities. And I've also shared with you, it's not a new comment, that I've been concerned that we've long been living beyond our means or are well on our way to doing so. And if we're not at that point today, and we may well be there, but I think we're dangerously close to getting there if we're not. So what we have here is a budget that provides 1% across the board a salary increase for faculty and staff with a $500 floor, which I think is a good and moral thing to do, to have that floor. And anything is better than nothing. But again, there are two concerns. One, faculty salaries remain below benchmark, and as faculty leaders and the University Senate have discussed with the President many times in public forums, it would take several years of larger percentage increments to get us where we need to be. And before 2007, when the money was available to make those investments in faculty and staff salaries, the President and the board chose to use the money for other things. And there were heavy investments in brick and mortar and non-academic pursuits. And we talked about the benefits program. Faculty and staff representatives to the benefits committee, I was on that for 11 years, have repeatedly asked for greater contributions to employee benefits. And there have been greater contributions, but not as much as that committee has asked for, not as much investment, although the negotiations, as Vice President Mead points out, remain ongoing for next year. But there's no question that increased benefit costs from premiums to copays over the last few years, and this is the number one thing I hear from people. Even more than the salary issue, it's how the increased premiums and copays, particularly for people with families, have eaten up whatever raise they've gotten. So people feel like they're falling farther and farther behind. Since the difficult financial times have hit the Commonwealth, we've had to navigate the diminishing state appropriations, as Regent Ridley so correctly pointed out, and we've passed this on to the students increasingly in tuition increases. And every time there's an unfunded mandate, that has to get passed on somewhere in the budget. Spot on. But at the same time, we didn't stop spending the money on non-academic pursuits, from athletics to buildings, and the obligation list has grown. And that debt service number has grown. 5.5 is the biggest number I've seen in a while, 5.5% of the budget. The total state cut ended up being $1.1 million. This board spent has committed us to spend $1.6 million every year for the next 19 years of tuition revenue that we get from international students to fund that agency bond for the International Center and Honors College. I mean, again, there's the money right there. And while this budget contains $9.1 million of new tuition revenue, what we also see is that there are unavoidable costs on this budget of $4.2 million for student financial assistance, which is scholarships, waivers, grants and aid, and that's half of every tuition dollar generated. It is by far the largest fixed cost increase in this document, and it is more than three times more of the 1% cost of living increase that is being given to our employees as a salary adjustment. So what I want to get across today is how demoralizing this situation is. Because after all, the people who do the work of teaching, directing, mentoring, the people who are benefiting from that half of every tuition dollar, who does that? Well, the people who do that, of course, are the faculty and staff at Western Kentucky University. And that leads to the second point. The budget we have before us contains a major cut to the academic affairs budget. It's $3.1 million. $2 million of that $3.1 is a cut to vacant faculty positions. So there are 26 vacant faculty positions that have now been captured to cover the cut. Part of that is being used to fund the raise. And that's not a fake cut. I mean, that's not a layoff. Nobody lost their job. We've lost potential jobs, 26 potential faculty jobs. If you look at the personnel report, we have 20 new tenure track faculty come in. So we actually cut more than we hired. We've cut more positions than we're hiring for next year. Those are real cuts. Future jobs that we will not have, positions that would have to be added back in better economic times, and I hope those come. But again, what does that say about the priority of the academic mission? So my message is this: we must invest in our human resources, in our faculty and our staff, if we're really serious about becoming a leading university with international reach instead of just saying that we are. Only when we appropriately compensate our faculty and staff whose contributions to the university mission are recognized in meaningful ways is this ever going to happen. And I urge you, my board colleagues, as the university's governing board and the decision makers who are in this room, I urge you to take this opportunity, and I like to think of this as an opportunity. If we can't, hard times teach us nothing if we don't sit back and rethink our spending priorities and think about how we need to invest in our human resources. Because our human resources, those faculty and staff who do these jobs day in, day out, are the best potential we have for a good return on investment. So, ask for your consideration.
Patty, thank you very much for your comments. I'm only going to speak for myself and not the board. I really appreciate all your facts and data and so forth, but if some way in the future, because again, I spent a lot of time looking at this budget from the standpoint of the chair of the Finance Committee, if you would send me your narratives in advance so that I could look at these factors. One of the couple of things that you mentioned, that you've mentioned numerous times before, and you reflect to this, and I'm really not understanding what you're meaning, and so clarification on your part would help me. Two items. Number one, the use of the word entertainment in lieu of. Okay, so I'd like for you to define that for me for a second. And then secondly, I really do appreciate you advocating on behalf of the staff and the faculty. However, I am a little surprised that you're now advocating for loss of potential jobs, and those are bodies and individuals that we don't even have anything to do with.
I'm not advocating for loss of potential jobs. That's exactly the point, Regent Ridley, is that in order to balance the budget and in order to fund a salary increase, we've reached the point where you have to cut potential jobs to do it. You take that 2%.
And I would like to point out to you that this board and the administration has been extremely sensitive of cutting jobs.
Yeah.
And we have done that and watched other universities within our peer group do that in sweeping measures. So I do want that to be brought to the attention of the board.
Oh, and I'm glad you have. But no, to be very clear, I have a serious problem with that, and that's something that we've talked about in University Senate all year. The idea that, I hate to use the phrase, it's so simple, you know, that you rob Peter to pay Paul. But the point is, when you get to the point where you have to lapse vacant lines, and there are a lot of reasons that a faculty position might be vacant, but now that you've taken it out of the budget, it's gone. You have to add it in later if you have the money, which is difficult to do. And the point is, when you're at the point when you're cutting vacant lines, you're cutting your potential faculty, when actually our student faculty ratio has actually crept up a little bit this year, and there are other competitor institutions that actually look more attractive than ours, and we can talk about that privately. That's a problem. And then you're told, well, if you want this raise, if the people want the raise, then there's no other way to do this, right? You're always presented with these devil or the deep blue sea kind of conundrums.
I understand. Let's address that in committee meetings then, maybe in the finance instead.
Right. The point is that entertainment, broadly speaking, is that which does not actually move forward the academic mission. And, you know, the faculty's favorite example is athletics, but there's plenty of other things as well. And there always seem to be endless amounts of enthusiasm for those. And we've talked about this when we talk about coaching salaries. We always talk about what we have to do to be competitive.
Are you addressing the entertainment question I asked?
Yes, I'm addressing your entertainment question. Okay. We always talk about how we have to be competitive. And, yeah, we do. I mean, if we're going to do something, we should do it right. I actually don't disagree with that. But why is it always everything other than the academics? I mean, we point out, and faculty send me bazillions of emails, and we present this material as Senate and crunch the data many different ways to show that we have a long way to go to be competitive on salaries. And everybody nods and says,
let's talk about the entertainment and not veer off back into salaries again, please.
But the point remains that when we point out the uncompetitive nature of it, we're always told that we have to wait. And now we've cannibalized our own in order to pay for the salary increase. So I support
this isn't an opportunity to argue with you, and I appreciate your comments for clarification, but I'd like to add one thing for you to think about.
Sure.
And number one is it's a slippery slope when someone uses a word in a public forum of entertainment. There are folks that don't think dance is a form of entertainment, or the theater, or a reading of literature, or a guest speaker, or other factors. So I would like for you to consider, when you use the word entertainment, that that is a very sweeping inclusion of lots of choices. So I don't know that that's an accurate statement to say entertainment for the sake of academics. I think that we have academics in the theater and in our arts and all other areas, and that is also entertainment.
And I consider that in those. Right,
so thank you for your comments.
Things that are part of the life of the mind and the culture.
Thank you. Any more discussion?
I do have one question. And in regards to the Apple Store comments that you were making earlier, and please forgive me if I misunderstood, but did you say earlier that university purchases were or were not going through the WKU store?
Are not.
Okay, thank you.
I have a state price list, don't you? Don't you just have a state price list for Apple computers?
It was a matter of where you were going to recognize the revenue.
Oh, okay.
So we thought we would be able to. I'm not sure. Gary Mazzaro's.
There's a difference between what students buy for their own personal use and what the university purchases as part of our IT program. So I wouldn't want to confuse the Apple store with what we do from an IT standpoint for our employees.
It's just a matter of where you recognize it and who get, we thought we would recognize it as auxiliary revenue or not.
Okay.
It's still, all the purchases are still happening. There's still a lot of happy Apple customers.
Mr. Chair, one final question.
Yes, sir.
Given the significance of tuition to the budget as a percentage, can we get assurances that our enrollment numbers are still tracking to support the projection on tuition for this year?
I believe we have an enrollment report under the Academic Affairs Committee. I'm not aware of exactly where we are on enrollment.
I mean, it is significant. So if we're not tracking, I think it's appropriate that if we are or we're not, it's appropriate to know that before adopting the budget.
We're budgeting at the fall 13 level,
which means what?
Actual fall 13 enrollment. So I understand that to the degree that we don't meet last fall's enrollment, then we could be faced with another budget reduction. But all signs are at this point, Dr. Meredith, do you have something short you want to?
At this point in the game, we seem to be tracking in a very confident pace that we'll be okay this fall. We have to have 6 ATPs to go. We're not even halfway through the cycle of registration yet.
So it's just very hard in the end of June to be able to predict the fall enrollment. That's why we reduced our budget, partially it was the state, partially the tuition, is to put us on a budget base that was in line with actual enrollment.
We, first-time, full-time freshmen were encouraged. Brian will have a more detailed report shortly. Our biggest challenge continues to be non-traditional part-time students, not exclusively, but in large measure on our regional campuses, because that's the primary population on our regional campuses. But part-time, non-traditional students are finding more jobs in an improved job market. And that is a challenge for enrollment of that general population demographic. Now, the enrollment profile is very complex and includes lots of things, but generally speaking, I would suggest our biggest challenge is retaining non-traditional part-time students. That's the demographic that hit us the hardest for the current year. And that continues to be a demographic that we're challenged to retain. So our challenge is not, it is enrollment, a first-time, full-time freshman, absolutely, and we're putting a lot of things in place to address that. But our biggest hurdle is retaining that demographic of non-traditional part-time students, and that's a loss of 200 or 300 is a significant factor for us, which was the primary factor for that revenue shortfall this past year, and that continues to be a challenge for us. Although I'm looking at, when I see the data, sophomores, juniors, and seniors show less decline than this time last year. But it's continues to be a moving target, and that continues to be our challenge. So will we have a growing enrollment this year? It's hard to tell at this point. But that's as much a result or more so for retention than it is recruitment. But both are critically important.
Well, I understand the banter back and forth, but from a simplistic standpoint, are the enrollment numbers supporting your projection as you sit here today?
Currently. Currently, I'm comfortable that we're budgeting at the appropriate enrollment level.
I'd like to make one.
Gordon Emsley had a hand
up. I think it's important to take into account we're not only tracking the enrollment numbers, but also the revenue associated with those enrollments. And as we shift to a greater emphasis on out-of-state students, TIP students, and international students, I think we're confident the dollar numbers that we're budgeting in terms of dollar revenue are fine. If not, in my opinion, conservative. The enrollment numbers only tell one type of story. As the tuition profile shifts to more full-time students, to more out-of-state students, the dollars per student is changing quite significantly. And we are tracking both the numbers and the dollars associated with those numbers on a weekly basis.
And Provost Simsley, don't you provide that? We don't just focus just on the numbers, because you in the past have given us the actual dollar amount of variance.
Well, we focus on both.
Yes, I know, but
focus on numbers.
But you've shared with the board that in the past.
Look at the revenue dollars associated.
Yeah, and that might help us again see the dollar amount, since you, simplistically, as you said, it's the amount of money that we're bringing in from tuition fees.
And
I'd like to make another comment with regard to Regent Mentor's concerns, which I think she presented very nicely, and as chairman of the academic committee, I share some of those concerns, and hope that we do keep the academic mission foremost in our minds all the time. It's easy to get lost in a nearly $400 million budget, and I'll be the first to admit I don't understand it all. But I think there's other means of recognizing the faculty and academics than just dollars, too, and I would propose that we all keep that in mind and continually find ways of recognizing it. To be circumspect about the whole thing, I think, you know, we have to say Western's made tremendous progress. The leadership has been strong, and if you look at the achievement of some of our students, they've been spectacular. So I don't think we need to feel like anybody's not done a great job with moving the university forward, but I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Very positive.
If I might, John, one thought. I would remind everybody that our, if not policy, our practice is when there's revenue to be received, it's 70% academics, 30% everything else. That's in the good times. So in the bad times, academics cut is far less than what we take from the other divisions of the university in terms of a percentage. In other words, academics doesn't take the hit that they receive when revenues are forthcoming. 70-30, that's our practice. That's the agreement that the provost and I have. The academics get 70% and we get 30% for everything else at the university, even though the share of the budget is considerably less than 70% for academic affairs. So you gotta look at the total picture in every given budget, and every budget's different, and this one was a challenge. I commend our team in financial affairs It was a difficult budget with a lot of tough decisions, and I might add that before we wring our hands too much about not filling vacant positions, we'd be mindful of the fact that I believe it's 25 people in our health center may lose their jobs entirely. Most will. In order to free up nearly $1.1 million to keep that cut from across the university from being as dramatic as it was. So the biggest hit taken in this budget was our health center staff. And that's all administrative and that's all student service. Now, that service is going to be retained and the health center is going to march forward efficiently and effectively. But there were still jobs lost with the decision to privatize the health center and free up $1.1 million to reduce everyone's budget cut. So that's an important note to keep in mind.
And on a redirect, I would say that I actually did not bring that up deliberately because I did not think that was something you would be comfortable having said publicly, but that's 50 or 51 jobs total. So you said. And that concerns me greatly. And those are
not as concerned as you would be if you'd had to take the cut to academic affairs and everyone else had we not made that move.
Well, and that's the larger point is that, you know, we have to deal with decisions that have been made in the past, and I'd like for the board and the administrative council to look at this as an opportunity to really rethink all of this because, again, hard times are no fun, but we can at least use them as moments to rethink things and plot our way forward. And, you know, that's how you take something like this and make an opportunity out of it.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
Yeah, it's more of a curiosity. I thought I saw in the Courier that there was a comparison of the tuition from the various universities. I don't think necessarily someone would decide to go to UK or U of L or Western because of the amount of tuition they're paying. I don't think that necessarily follows because there's a perceived value in going to a certain institution from a qualitative standpoint. But I am curious. I mean, do you look, Gary, mm-hmm. and Ann, as to where our ranking is? Do you try, for example, to say, I'm going to get below U of L or I'm going to get below UK in formulating this budget?
Yes.
And maybe you do that.
Yes,
where,
absolutely.
Is there a chart that shows where we are?
We'll do that for you.
I think it'd be a good thing to see. We'd be pleased to do the comparison for you, yeah. But I would want to include that total cost of attendance,
tuition,
room, board, yes. et cetera. And yes, we will do that for you because we do track that. And just to give you an insight, uh-huh. Because I've said it often, in my opinion, our price point should be slightly behind UK and U of L.
Okay.
And more than the others because of quality variations and marketing. However, I do believe that up until this past year, price point was not a significant variable for us because our enrollment was growing, has grown for 16 straight years. This year, no. For the first time, it didn't, and we've talked much about that. I do believe price point is a variable, particularly for that market segment that I described earlier, the part-time non-traditional students, mostly commuter students. I do believe price point has become a factor for them, but not just us, for every institution, not just in Kentucky, but across America. What we're dealing with is not unique to our institution, but we're the ones we care the most about. And have to address all the dynamics of enrollment management, including price point. So price point has become an important variable for us, but our philosophy heretofore, and I think going forward, is we have the third largest share of the budget in Kentucky in the higher ed budget. We have the third largest enrollment. Every way you measure it, we do track where we stand in Kentucky, but we also track where we stand nationally, and we're about at the midpoint of public universities in America. Mm-hmm. So those insights, I think, get to what you were asking.
That's what I'm wondering about. And can you get the estimated cost of attendance of the books and the meal plans from public records of, let's say, Murray and Eastern and UK and Western?
Sure.
Because
we'll pull it.
That's the comparison you really want to make.
And no question. And we think we fare very well, particularly with our within the competitive marketplace, not only in tuition but with regard to the total cost of attendance.
We will do our best to summarize it.
Okay.
Some institutions don't want to publish it. They rather say, we're affordable, we'll work with you, we've got scholarship funds, just call us.
Okay.
So there's at least one institution that is not as transparent as we are. We will put it out on our website to make sure students know.
Good.
As we go into our next recruitment cycle, which begins late August, there's always a recruitment cycle, but late August officially, we're going to be very bold in, correct me if I say this wrong, in our... We're going to have an affordability piece and lay it out.
Good.
Room and board, housing, you know, meal plans, those things. We're very competitive as the other schools. Price points, third cousin of summer with the others. But we're just going to lay it out there, and that will begin a conversation that I think will be very helpful.
Okay. Tuition is important, but the total price point, we feel like we're very competitive.
Good.
I have done my own research.
I have a reason to do research.
I saw you were anxious in your seat.
When we were talking about increasing tuition, you know, I called the counselors at both of the local schools, and we are significantly lower, especially well, also with tuition, but significantly lower with board room and board than Louisville and UK. I mean, significantly.
Okay.
Now, we are a little higher than Eastern and, you know, some of the, and the other ones, but we are significantly lower. And when I asked, and I disagree very much with your statement, asked the counselor. when students choose universities, does money matter? Oh my gosh, yes, it matters.
Okay.
Yes, it matters. And it matters if you have a winning athletic team. Sorry about it, but it does. You know, there's tons of people that come in my office, and I say, where are you going to go? I'm going to go to UK because they've got a great basketball team there. And I'm like, really, that's not the reason that you want to go there. Let me talk to you about Western. Let me see what they can do for you. A lot of them go for a semester, and then it's not what they want, and they come back. You know, unfortunately, these cuts are everywhere. And I talk to the teachers and the local school systems, and there's tons of them that have gotten pink slips, they've lost jobs, and their health benefits have really changed. You know, they have huge deductibles, you know, so unfortunately, cuts are, you know, widespread. You know, it's difficult. But
while you're collecting data, and to again address one of Regent Mentor's concerns, I'd love to know what the debt service percent is at some of the other universities too, how we compare there. If we're at 5.5%, where are some of the others?
And that might be more meaningful next year after a lot of them kick into gear with their projects.
We can try. I don't know whether we can collect that.
I think we can get close.
And do an open record request to all the other universities.
We'll have fun. We get an accurate data.
I want to make an observation based on everything that's been said here by everybody. And not isolate on the nuts and bolts for a moment, because that task of putting that budget together is Herculean and well done. I look at the mission of this university and what we do as a three-legged stool, and there are three parts to that. You know, one is academics, one is athletics or entertainment, and the other is brick and mortars. You take one of those legs away, the university collapses or the stool collapses. So when we look at this, whether it's so much for academics percentage-wise, so much on the athletic side, or so much for brick and mortars, we can't forget that each of these individual units depend upon the other for success. And I think that's part of the budget process that has to be considered.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for the lively discussion and the points.
One more.
I move to approve this.
I just wanted to add into this discussion, and I think that was a good point, that everything in the budget, and I commend, you know, the staff, the financial affairs for, I know that there was a lot of tough decisions that were made in this, putting this together, but
I mean, right, if the three legged stool that all is all compatible, but it's just more and more the burden of holding up this stool is on students, with close to 50% of the total budget coming from tuition and fees. It's just, I mean, every day, I mean, I know of students that, you know, complain about tuition, and, you know, it is a breaking point, and I'm just most concerned about the financial threshold for all students, especially, you know, for domestic non-resident students, international students, and online students, because I think given the flexibility that we have of changing that tuition outside of what the CP is given to us of the 4.8% that we set, they get a bit higher, and those are typically non-traditional students, I mean, for online students especially. So I would say those are the most concerning points for that.
Okay, excellent. Certainly well said.
Have I moved to approve this budget?
I don't remember. Yes.
It's been a while back.
I said, please pause for a moment because I think.
Didn't Mr. Higdon then?
Agent Higdon had a question and we have had wonderful discussion. I do want to say that I think this is very healthy, actually, to be able to be in a public forum and us to voice the best interests of this university, I think, is a marvelous thing. So with that said, do I hear the question?
Call the question.
Question and called. Second?
Yes.
Then. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
Passed. Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
No, I said aye.
Okay, I'm making sure that we're no extensions.
Anybody want a roll call?
I've got it. I just want to make sure there were no extensions. I think we got it.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to use my prerogative to announce a 10-minute break.